Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Somehow, some way, we made it to Friday. We are so glad you're here with us for the next couple of hours. Fun show today. James Harden is making championship promises. Danny Ainge is defending Kyrie Irving like only Danny Ainge can. And in Philly, they're all in on Carson Wentz. Again, James Harden has already won an MVP. He's already made 7 All-Star teams, and he's done it all before the age of 30. There is one glaring line missing on his resume. Yesterday, Harden says that he not only knows he needs to bring a championship to Houston, but he promised he'd do it, quote, very soon. CC, what'd you make of Harden's comments?
Man, I don't like those promises. In team sports, if he was playing in the British Open, playing by himself, sure, saying he was going to do it and everything. Okay, you're out there by yourself. But I don't like the I factor, especially given everything that's coming out of Houston. Problem coaching staff, got rid of a bunch of coaches. The head coach didn't know if they was going to sign him to an extension. It was a problem. All right, the owner had to get on this private plane, go to West Virginia to be able to work out that situation.
And that's still not worked out, by the way. Still no extension. They thought they were going to get it worked out.
And we know that, let's just say, some of the Chris Paul stuff in Harden was real. Obviously, that's the reason why you move Chris Paul the way that they did. Man, this is a tough promise. I don't like guys making promises. You don't have no championship experience. Now, Nick and I were talking about this earlier. As I said, Nick, name me a guy that made a championship promise and fulfilled it. He was like, well, not many people. LeBron did it in Cleveland. I was like, yeah. You saw how the promise and what the negative
promise
publicity got them in Miami. Yep. Not one, not two, not three. It's just not. You don't have to do that. It doesn't make you a champion. It doesn't make you that all you're into it more than other people. No, people say, oh, well, I'm going to verbalize it. No, you verbalize what you are going to do. If he would have said, we as the Houston Rockets, the owner, because the owner's committed. The general manager, he is committed. Harden's committed. I just prefer that part about him promising that he's going to do it. Leave that part out because they're not far off. Haven't been far off the last couple years. And if not for the super team in Golden State, Houston could have been that team like Toronto if they had gotten the luck Toronto got to be able to hoist the NBA trophy.
But, Nick, could you see a little bit how the last couple of days we've been talking about how Harden and Russell Westbrook will get along and how they're going to fit and all of it, and maybe it's up to Harden to say, oh, no, we got this. Don't worry. We're not only going to win, it's going to happen pretty soon, just to maybe get all the negative talk out of what will fit and sort of get the whole world onto this Houston bandwagon?
I think it's less about the last few days and more about the last few years. I think Chris and I go back and forth, who's best player in the league? Is it Kawhi? Is it LeBron? Was it Kevin Durant? James Harden, since Mike D'Antoni's been there, has accomplished everything one can accomplish, except for what he's talking about here. Since Mike D'Antoni's been there, he's averaging, this is over 3 years, 32-7-9. He's got 2 scoring titles and an assist title. He's won an MVP and finished second the other 2 years. Historically, you're going to look back at this 3-year stretch and we'll see if it continues and say, oh my God. Like, as far as offensive production, put this up against any 3-year stretch any player's ever had. Yet, not only has he not won a championship, hasn't even been to a finals. In this 3-year stretch, only been to 1 conference finals. Years 1 and years 3 bounced in the second round. Both of those years, when you were bouncing the second round, you were eliminated in a game where your opposing team didn't have its best player. Lost to the Spurs without Kawhi, lost to the Warriors without Durant. So it is a 3-year era since D'Antoni's been there of truly unprecedented regular season success for Harden, and then not reaching where you need to reach in the postseason. And we can blame it on bad luck 2 years ago, and I think that had a lot to do with it, with the Chris Paul injury. But this is the last mountain left for him to climb. So, Chris, your point being, It's fine if that's the last mountain for him to climb. Don't verbalize it this way. I get that. But this is real for Harden. This is the only thing left on the resume. If he had won the title 2 years ago when they were up 3-2 on Golden State, there wouldn't be much of a discussion about who the best player in basketball is. Wouldn't be Kawhi, LeBron. Harden would have the strongest claim to the throne, if you will. But because they've never even been to the finals, he's an also-ran when we talk about the best player in basketball.
Yeah, I don't think they're a Russell Westbrook away from being a champion. It's just not, it's not a good look. You talk about those unbelievable numbers, and what has it gotten them?
Right.
To me, it speaks to my point. Like, so them adding players, him saying, I need some help so that we can win a championship. Because you're right, those numbers will match up, and he's not done. And I give Harden a lot of credit. He plays with a lot more energy on the defensive end. He is taking care of his body. Some of the things is from a lifestyle standpoint. He's curbed those things to be able to, that he would have unbelievable cardio and be able to play the way that he does. Yeah, I got a lot of respect for that. Just don't individualize it. You're in a team sport. Understand the responsibility that everyone has in that. But to me, it still boils down to, I don't trust their coach. You talked about in those series the last couple years with their best player out. What move has that coach done to give you confidence that you can make a statement like that? I haven't seen it through his coaching career. I haven't seen it when I listen to him. I haven't seen it when I hear about the X's and O's. Yeah, they're a great offensive team. But defensively, when you get in the playoffs, Nick Nurse was the difference. Giannis, oh, we ain't got no answer for him. Let's put Kawhi on him. Nick Nurse made a number of adjustments. Van Fleet, we're going to put him back into the lineup. We're going to start a different lineup coming out in the third quarter. Those are the types of moves that win you a championship. And I don't have the confidence that they have the type of head coach that's going to be able to do that, to be able to back up what he, what Harden is saying. I got no problem personally with Harden and his commitment to trying to bring a championship, but just be careful. You don't have to go about it that way.
Well, it looks like the head coach is going to be there if they can work this out.
And Russell, even if they can't, he's going to be the coach this year.
Right.
We just don't know moving forward.
And Russell Westbrook is going to be there moving forward. Do you think, to Chris's point, they could get this done with that head coach and with that guard alongside James Harden?
I am not as
down.
Can
these two hold each other accountable and get something done?
So I'm not as down on D'Antoni as Chris is. I might not be quite as high on him as Chris Broussard is. Broussard said he's already got him in the Hall of Fame. I think you can make a case for that due to innovation. It's tougher when it comes to postseason success, part of his resume. I am not certain, and I want to make this clear because I've been the one defending the Russell Westbrook trade. I'm not certain it's going to work. I'm just certain it's a move I would have made. I'm just certain that if I have the opportunity to trade out Chris Paul and the relationship that had deteriorated and the player that had deteriorated for Russell Westbrook, the potential upside of that is enormous. The downside has to be recognized as well, and whether or not James Harden alongside Russ can be as effective as he was alongside Chris Paul.
Yeah, things just got harder, all right? I know Harden's making a promise, but things got harder. They got no answer for Anthony Davis, and Kawhi just came back to the West. So it wasn't like the West just got easier because Golden State broke up. No, they're going to have to deal with how can they win four series. I don't have the confidence that they have the head coach should be able to get them through. I got confidence in their players. Eric Gordon's very important. Does he take a back seat now that Russ needs the ball a little bit more? He shouldn't, because he's one of the glue guys for them. His ability to be able to stretch the defense and play at a high level and play defense. One of the questions is Clint Capella. How much better is he going to get? Because he's got to be able to live up to that contract that they gave him last year. Those things, I believe, are vital for Houston to continue to build.
All right, let's take a break. Talk a little football on the other side. Are Aaron Rodgers and the Packers already Super Bowl bound? What's next on First Things First?
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow the Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Tomorrow on FS1, it's an MLB doubleheader. First, rookie sensation Pete Alonso powers the Mets. They take on the Giants. Then it's Anthony Rendon leading the Nationals against Ronald Acuna Jr. and the Braves. Catch the action starting 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific. It's on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral, and I'm what will be my favorite viral of the day. Check this out, guys. Celtics general manager Danny Ainge playing one-on-one against his dog. Someone needs to redraft this guy. Check out the handles at a young age 60 from Danny Ainge. That's actually pretty good. A lot of guys can't get down that far. Nick, you got on Twitter and replied to this video saying, quote, "That little French bully showing more defensive resistance than Enes Kanter will all year."
No, that ain't right, man. Listen, why are you messing with Cam?
This was just a perfect storm. It allowed me to take a little shot at my buddy Enes Kanter. And I can say my buddy now. He and I had a nice little conversation in the DMs yesterday that'll stay private, but
okay. We've
come to an understanding.
All right.
And
good. It
allowed me to tweet out a video of Jenna's childhood crush, one Daniel R. Ainge.
That's the guy I fell in love with. At that age. You guys make fun of me.
30 years.
He's an Adonis.
70 pounds ago.
He's an Adonis.
I mean, look at that.
Look at him. By the way, I also tweeted last night. I don't tweet a ton. I tweeted at Danny Ainge. I know it's been about 2 years, but perhaps you could see it within your free time to maybe,
tweet
Jenna, or follow back.
Nothing? He is a married grandfather.
I'm not hitting
17.
On the man. I just really
You've
like
been hitting
him.
On him for 35 years.
Well, it depends. Semantics.
You should maybe let this one go.
Look at us. Come on. Look how cute that is.
Jenna loves her some mediocre white dudes, man.
Stop it. That's why I love you so much, Nick.
You guys' description of love.
Time for stories to start your morning. Yesterday.
No, I did love seeing this.
Kevin Durant hopped on the gram, posted a couple of pictures of his rehab from his torn Achilles. Check him out. Shooting some hoops in the pool. All right, Chris, what's going to be the hardest part of KD's recovery?
That's what I'm talking about right there. This is exciting for me. Because I believe this is his biggest challenge of his career. I believe he is going to respond to it. You could see with some of the movement that they're doing. That's why I've been consistent with this. The cutting edge medicine and the recovery aspect, it's totally different than what guys went through a number of years ago. Kevin Durant will be back. Man, from this Achilles injury, you see him up around. You see his jump shot, him still shooting. The scenery right there, of course, is second to none. I'm glad he shared this with us, man. I'm a huge fan of Kevin Durant, and I want to see the Easy Sniper Money. What's his name?
Easy Money Sniper.
Yeah, that dude, too.
Yeah,
him, too. I'm excited about it.
I'll be very quick here. When Chris says he'll be back, Chris means he believes he can be back in February of this coming season. That played the 8 months from injury, that's a realistic, not a guarantee or anything, but that is a realistic timetable to see Kevin Durant this year, which for the Nets would shake up the Eastern Conference playoff picture enormously.
I wonder where in Brooklyn that was. That is beautiful.
I don't think he was in Brooklyn.
Yesterday, Tobias Harris said that the Sixers are for sure at the top of the Eastern Conference. However, he may be a little bit biased considering the fact that the Sixers gave him $180 million this offseason. Nick, is Philly the best team in the East?
No, but they are. I mean, they are nipping at Milwaukee's heels, and they could be the best team in the East. Milwaukee's got a question in the backcourt, which is they paid Eric Bledsoe early. That prevented them from paying Malcolm Brogdon. They brought back George Hill. Mm-hmm. They might have let their best backcourt player go. How much can they overcome that loss since they did bring back essentially everyone else? Philly's a question of fit. They lost their best shooter in Redick. They obviously lost their closer in Jimmy Butler. They bring in Horford. They bring in Josh Richardson. But, of course, Tobias Harris is going to think this. And Tobias Harris, remember, he turned down $80 million a year ago, bet on himself, turned that 80 into 180. So he's feeling great about everything right now.
Yeah, well, they'll be dependent on him to be the potential second scorer for them. You get in the playoffs. We've seen Ben has struggled the last 2 years. But I challenge Ben Simmons. Man, release a video, man. Release some video of you working on your game, man, outside of
Kevin Durant
the restricted
did it, and he's got
area.
One leg. You're right. You know what? You're right. You're right. You made a good point.
Release some video, bro.
It's a good point. All right, on to the NFL. The AFC West is loaded with elite quarterbacks. You got Patrick Mahomes. You got Phillip Rivers. You got Derek Carr. Well, Joe Flacco is in Denver trying to get back to that list. Says he's got a lot left in the tank. CeCe, how good can Flacco be for the Denver Broncos?
John, who picked the quarterback?
John Elway.
Oh, okay. Anytime Elway picking the quarterback, man, I got problems. I believe Denver's defense got the potential to be nasty, but I don't see Joe Flacco playing at a high level. Change of address is not going to change his skill level. Mile high is not going to help Joe Flacco. He's known for throwing the ball deep. They don't have the receiving core to match his skill level. And Flacco is one of those quarterbacks that has not transitioned from being a pitcher to being able, I can throw short, I can throw sideways. He just has not transitioned in his career.
I understand the best moment of Joe Flacco's career arguably came against the Denver Broncos. I think it was at Mile High, the Jacoby Jones touchdown, the touchdown against the Broncos. I think it was Raheem Moore, the safety, who misplayed the ball on their Super Bowl run.
Yes, the Mile High miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. But listen, that Joe Flacco does not exist anymore. I don't know if it ever existed outside of that playoff run. All the numbers say since that season, he's been the worst everyday starter in football. That's not going to change in Denver.
All right,
they should stay with your guy, Case.
Yeah, see? I knew that sentence would eventually be uttered. Last season, then-Browns head coach Hugh Jackson was fired after starting the season with just 2 wins in the first 8 games. After Hugh was fired, the team won 5 games, and Baker Mayfield took off. Well, yesterday, Hugh was on the Herd and was asked if Baker's recent comments bother him. Here's what he had to say.
It doesn't bother me personally because, I mean, again, I've been in the National Football League for a long time, and I've seen a lot of different ways that people have handled things. He has to do what he feel he needed to do, you know, and so that's how he's handled it. Again, everybody's going to handle things differently. That's how he chooses to make sure that he's ready to go, ready to play, or has his team ready to play. And again, the Browns wasn't playing Hugh Jackson. They were playing the Bengals. So at the end of the day, whatever that was for him and their football team on those particular days, it worked. They won the game.
Look, CeCe, Baker Mayfield is a different cat. He just is than the guys we've seen coming out in the last couple of years. He's brash. He's confident. He's young. He knows he has a lot to learn, but he walks in as if he's already learned a lot of it. Are there any drawbacks to a guy whose style is that when you're going into year two?
I think when you're trying to have a long career, you can't project out there what you're going to look like when you get 30 and how things are going to sound when you were younger. So, yes, there can be negative from that. But I think that right now in life, it's really, really hard to be true to yourself. And professional sports is very, very difficult. And man, there are a lot of successful people out there. But most of the time, people don't make suggestions about other people's lives that are successful. Your brother, successful doctor. People don't call him up. You know something? You know what you should be doing? We got 3 or 4 new procedures. You need to be continuing your education. You know what? They accept his expertise. And Baker Mayfield is one of the rare, rare breeds that we have. There's only 32 quarterbacks in the NFL. 32 of these guys in the world. And Baker is special even in that group. So among special guys, he's even special. But this is his personality. Those who have coached him, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem, just like the quarterback shouldn't look a certain way. He doesn't have to talk a certain way. He doesn't have to be a certain height for me. Now we're seeing with Arizona, with their chance that they're taking. No, in this day and age where you can protect the quarterback, you cannot brutally beat up the quarterback in the NFL. Now he can be any size. With the millennials now in the NFL, he can't have any type of personality. All these new young coaches we have, you think they can't relate to him? Also, one thing we don't know. We don't know what Hugh said to Baker when he was there. We don't know actually how he was coached. Because I know Baker thought he should have been the starter from the beginning. So when he didn't put him in there, he put Tyrod in there. Did he hold Baker back? And immediately once Baker begins to start, the guy who wouldn't start me, he happens to be on the opposition. Oh, I'm getting ready to knife him. I can understand the personality. That's how you can play a long time in this league. I know Hugh has coached a long time, a little bit as a head coach, and none of that was successful except for drafting Baker, which wasn't his call. That was the general manager's call in Dorsey. So I got a lot of respect for Baker trying to be true to who he is and carve out his own career. Because in sports, it's the only career where you're an expert, but people are always telling you what you should be doing.
And I think we do a, this isn't just in sports, but I'll use the sports example. I think we do a bad job assuming something that is impossible, which is we can take someone's personality, keep all the good things, and then carve away at some of the things that can be prickly. This was one of my things, whether you agree or disagree, in some of the defenses of Odell. When it's like, okay, we want the excitement, the competitive spirit, the exuberance on the field, but let's carve away some of the mayhem it causes. Baker, I talked to Mina Kimes yesterday. Mina wrote the article that so many of these quotes have come from. She spent a week with Baker Mayfield. You know what she said? Man, his leadership is seductive. It's Chris Carter spent 10 minutes with him, shook his hand, said
he's a different
type of cat.
And not strange, just unusually good.
And unusually confident, unusually charismatic. Hugh Jackson said that when he walked into the building, this is a couple of years ago, that he would make this that laugh sound or whatever, and then everyone would do it. Everyone that's been around Baker has been very consistent, that he has this intangible leadership quality that is unique to him. For people to assume that you can then strip away some of what you could call tribalism, which is you're either with me or against me. Okay, hey, Duke Johnson, even you're on the team, but you're not here. Bleep you. Colin Cowherd, don't like you either. Hugh, you were here. And keep that unique and almost generational leadership. I think that's naive. And so, yeah, I think you will step in some potholes. But I think it's this personality that has allowed a 5 foot or a 6 foot kid that had to walk on at multiple places to have the success that he's had. So you got to take the good with some of the potential bad with this type of person, I believe.
I think you make such a good point. I think if Odell was in a winning culture and a winning team, we wouldn't have seen some of the negative things as much or focused so much on it. But what happens if things go sour? And I happen to like the confidence that Baker has. I love the confidence Odell had. But if they start losing and things go sour, is he looked upon differently? Do you suddenly want a guy like that to maybe not be running around sticking a flag in the center of a field?
Pro sports is about performance. It's about getting it done. That's why they keep a scoreboard, because they want to know at the end who won and who lost. In the NFL, how we measure quarterbacks is based on winning football games. His career will be based on that. Not did he take a shot at someone who was on TV saying something about it. I just do believe this. In this day and age, we got a lot of people that say whatever they want to about athletes. I don't have no problem with the athletes, that being Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Baker Mayfield. If they want to defend what they're doing, I think that they should. I think that there's too many guys that have sat around and taken abuse and everything, internalized all that. If you feel a certain way, if you want to call somebody's TV show, radio show, I believe that you should be able to do that. If people got enough guts to be able to open up their mouth to say something, then people should have enough guts to be able to defend it, and that's what they're doing.
And I just think this applies across past sports. Like, this show, someone said to you, Jenna, hey, we love the goofy joke moments that make everyone laugh, but the ones that don't hit, cut those out. You couldn't. Because you get one with the other. Like, at times, I get way too bogged down in the numbers. Like, right? Like, there's no question about that. It's a weakness. But at times, it's like, wow, I had never heard that. Like, there are things that, with anyone that brings something, in theory, elite to the table, there's going to be some baggage associated with it. And so I think that's the reality with Baker. And I think that people need to just take that for what it is.
And this jerk here says, oh, his numbers is elite level. And Jenna, your joke telling's elite level.
Right. Hey, Chris is. I didn't want to bring up things Chris don't do well, so I just leave it alone. He already knows.
You think some of my jokes are goofy?
Well, I just think they don't make any sense.
They don't make sense. My jokes don't make sense.
They're not funny. Is the problem.
They're goofy, they don't make sense, and they're not funny?
Yep. But you're woke.
Man, I'm the worst. I am woke. On to the Packers now. There is no question what impact Aaron Rodgers will have on that offense, and yet it's the other side of the ball that has him excited. Aaron Rodgers says he likes the improvement he's seen on the defensive side of the ball, saying, quote, it's good to have some new energy. CeCe, can a new-look defense propel Rodgers and the Packers back to Super Bowl contention?
I believe not only the new look defensively, they just have not been good defensively for a long time. A lot of times, I'm amazed. Because people don't look at things and look at the history of things. But when you go back and look at Aaron Rodgers, Look at his playoff games, how he played, and how many points the defense gave
him. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. I mean, how well he can play and they still lose the football game.
See, his first playoff game ever, he scored 45 points and they lost. His first game, the first taste of the playoffs against, I think it was Larry Fitzgerald, Kurt Warner, and the Cardinals.
Yep.
So drop 45 in your first playoff game ever. Go home with the loss. Go. I didn't mean to interrupt.
And for Green Bay for a long time, and even when we played Green Bay, there's a lack of physicality that the Green Bay Packers have had for a long time. Now, they went out when free agency, Reggie White, they went out and bought some physicality with Reggie White, and that brought them a championship. But if you look at the last 10 years, as far as defense, points scored, they have not been in the top 10. If you look at the lack of running game, so you're getting ready to try to win a football game where defensively I ain't going to be physical and I'm not going to run the ball and be physical. That's what Aaron Rodgers has been dealing with. So the people want to criticize Aaron Rodgers. They don't like Aaron Rodgers, don't like his attitude. This is what he's been dealing with. They've got a different defensive coordinator the last couple years, and now what they've decided is they're getting ready to get big and they're getting ready to get physical. Same thing New England did when at the end of the season, we're going to run the ball and we're going to defend and depend on our defense. So that's what they've gotten back to. They've changed their defensive scheme. They've changed their personnel and how the players look. Now, if they can just give Aaron some help on the offensive side, the physicality of running the ball, Green Bay can be that championship, the team that they were the last time they had a top 10 defense, 2010, last time they won a Super Bowl.
And this is why I can't just be a count the rings guy, even though with quarterbacks, how many Super Bowls you've been to, how many championships do you have? You have the most impact on winning. I get it. Aaron Rodgers' first 4 years as a starter, one of those years he won the Super Bowl. The other 3 years in the playoffs, his team allowed 51, 37, and 45 in their losses. Okay, how about the last three playoff losses he's had? You had the game to go to the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, where there's the onside kick, then you can't get the stop in overtime, Russell Wilson game-winning touchdown pass. The next year, Aaron Rodgers completes not one, two Hail Marys on the same drive to force overtime,
yeah.
Can't get a stop, they lose in overtime. The next year, conference championship game again, 31-0. A minute into the second half against Atlanta. There's just no resistance from the defense whatsoever. There had to be a feeling of helplessness, which is why Rodgers talked about this week Chris Sims, I think it was, talked about their additions, talked about the outside linebackers they added, mm-hmm. talked about that defensive front. He mentioned second year under Mike Pettine. Like, he knows that division, that weather, all those things that, as mm-hmm. great as he is, if the expectation is got to score 40 in January in Lambeau, we're going to be in trouble.
It's why he doesn't trust anyone. He's had to do everything by himself for the last couple of years, so he doesn't buy mm-hmm. that anyone else is coming in or trust that anyone's going to help him. But just quickly explain why a good defense could help out a quarterback and could make life easier for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, for one, you're going to get more possessions. They're going to give you more turnovers. You can be on a short field. But what it takes out of the opposition when they know that there's a physical defense, when they know that, you know, we're not going to be able to run up and down, then Aaron becomes more important. You turn the ball over two or three times,
right.
Give Aaron those extra possessions,
yep.
But the physicality of football, you cannot take tackling and hitting out of football, and now they have the type of defense that can present that physicality.
All right, good stuff. Take a break. Coming up, a little basketball. Can James Harden live up to his championship promise? That is still ahead on First Things First. First things first, and we're joined by FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Hey, Chris.
What up, man?
Always good to be here.
I'm part of the First Things First management team. I apologize.
We have fun during the break.
Things that happen during a break stay during a break, CC.
Yeah. No. What happens in Vegas don't stay there either. 9 months later, you see him walking around.
Hey, Broussard, Kyrie Irving has moved from Boston to Brooklyn, that we know. Last season, he had his best statistical season, but the Celtics were bounced in the second round. Kyrie was blamed for a lot of the team's issues, team chemistry, ball movement, relationship with the head coach. But Danny Ainge says, quote, "I feel like the Kyrie bashing is unfair." Chris, you agree with Danny Ainge there?
I do. I mean, look, Kyrie certainly deserves criticism. There's no doubt. I mean, he showed poor leadership. They didn't go as far with you as they had gone without you. So he deserves some criticism. But it's gone way too far. He's just one of several reasons why it was a disappointing season. Number one, let's look at Brad Stevens. You know, I kind of call him at this point the little engine that could coach. You know, because he's one of those coaches. No, wow. I mean, serious. What I mean is, and I'm with you in that he's great with X's and O's, and up to a year or so ago, I was saying this guy is phenomenal, and he still may be, but there are coaches in the NBA that maximize a little bit of talent, but when they get a lot of talent, they can't bring it to that highest level, right? Because they have trouble dealing with the superstars. The verdict, I would say, is still out on Stevens, but last year that was the case. He couldn't manage the ego of a superstar in Kyrie Irving. And then he mismanaged Gordon Hayward, a star. He had been a star, and we know there were reports that came out that the way he handled Hayward kind of rubbed some of the younger players the wrong way. So there's that issue. The second thing was the young players. And this is... Look, it's good to get draft picks, but this can be also show you the negative of having too many. Right? Draft. We talk about, Oklahoma City's got 15 draft picks in the next 5 years. Well, that might not be the best thing because they brought in a lot of young players. And CeCe, you notice, young players, a lot of them are coming in thinking, I want to establish myself as a star first, get my max deal or close to it,
yes,
and then we'll start winning. So you had a Jaylen Brown, a Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. These guys that understandably, it's their job, it's a business, want to get paid. And sometimes averaging 10 points or 11 points when Kyrie's doing all the work isn't going to get you paid. And then, of course, last year they had some success, so they thought they were better than they were. Mm-hmm. The young players wanted to do a little more ISO, you know, breaking the offense a little more. So all of that conspired along with what Kyrie did.
Younger players, I think you make a great point, and I don't think fans look at it that way. Veteran players, because they've had experience, because they've been to two or three teams, they've been in several systems, that's when the veteran players are like, you know something? I'm better off being a role player. Danny Green, remember him when he was younger?
Right.
Non-athletic, not a good defensive player. I mean, he can shoot the basketball, but that's all he can do. As a young player, he's trying to get minutes. Right. He's trying to score. He's trying to take people off the dribble. I can do more than just shoot. So trying to prove people wrong, that's one of the things in trying to get paid as a young player. Kyrie understands that because Kyrie was that kid when he was in Cleveland. His numbers were phenomenal. But they got crushed.
Yeah.
But people knew that he could play. And there were times during the game when Kyrie was younger, he would just, like Marcus Haynes with the Globetrotters, he would just do things to you to let you, so people could see, man, I'm that good at basketball. One of the problems with the Celtics was there were so many different agendas. Kyrie wasn't a great leader, but Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, they didn't do a good job as far as when guys' contracts were staged and getting a message to these younger players, even if you might not be getting 15 points a game. We look at you as the future, telling Jaylen Brown, telling Tatum those types of things, bringing those things under control. So then the leaders, it's easier for them to lead. So they need to be able to spread that blame around. Kyrie, of course, the marquee players, the big-time players, that's all a part of being a leader and getting that salary that he was getting.
I think everything you're saying is totally fair. I find these comments, though, really interesting for a slightly different reason because it would be easy, maybe be incorrect, but it would be easy, especially since Kyrie is gone, for the message for the Celtics leaked to reporters, said publicly to be, I mean, Kyrie was a bomb that went off in our locker room. He's crazy. He walks into practice, asks Brad Stevens, what does government mean to him? He's going down these YouTube rabbit holes. He's calling LeBron. He's talking about this. That message, at least then, even if it's not accurate, it wipes the hands clean
off. Now you say, now we're okay.
And now we're okay. Look, we got Kimbo, who's almost as good and doesn't have the drama. When Danny Ainge says the Kyrie bashing is unfair, totally fine comment. But that does put the spotlight on Brad Stevens for the reasons you said. And in my mind, it puts the spotlight on Danny because it is the general manager's job to see what Terry Rozier did in that conference finals run when Kyrie was injured. Know Terry Rozier's contract status. Know the personality of the player and say, are we better off with his value pretty damn high, moving him rather than have him as an insurance policy that is going to be unhappy and a malcontent all year long. It is the general manager's job, when I heard, when you heard, when everyone heard, that Jason Tatum is spending a time with Kobe to have a hard conversation with him going into the year. Say, listen, man, appreciate you working on your game. Here's what you did really well. Here's what Kobe did really well. And looking up to Kobe is one thing. Thinking you can do what Kobe did, who is arguably the best bad shot maker ever. Like, what made Kobe special was he took impossible shots but made them. And Danny Ainge either didn't do that, couldn't do that, or didn't get it across to him in that regard. That's on the organization. If it's not that Kyrie set a bomb off in the locker room, then there are more structural issues with the Celtics that could linger into this season, even though Rozier and Kyrie are both gone.
I think he had another motive, too. Danny Ainge knows you need superstars to win in this league.
Yes.
And he doesn't want to bash a superstar.
You cannot do
right?
that.
So he wants other guys to look at the team and say, okay, you know, not that they're anti-superstars and
stuff.
That's
a great point.
So that's a big part of this as well. And look, Kemba is unique in that he's a star kind of with a role player's character or something. So that's why I do think he'll fit well. But that's a message Danny Ainge is getting out.
Just quickly, whose team is it now? Who's the leader in that locker?
It's got to be Kemba.
Yeah, I think it's going
to
be Kemba.
It has to be Kemba. I mean, Jason Tatum maybe one day, but Kemba's got to be the guy. And Kemba, by the way, has experience with that. He was the leader in Charlotte. Now, they weren't good. I wouldn't blame him for that. They did. Michael's done a terrible job.
He's a great leader in college, too.
Absolutely.
Great leader in college.
And a winner and a guy. We haven't seen him play big NBA games, but if you can carry it over from college, he is a big game, big shot maker, big shot taker. So it becomes Kemba's team.
All right, take a break. Coming up, Broussard, we'll see you a little later. Can Carson Wentz regain his 2017 form? That's next on First Things First. We're now joined by Pro Bowler Bart Scott.
Welcome back, man. It's been a while.
It is,
man.
Nice to
Invitation is the greatest form of flattery, man.
Oh, you think I'm going to be like you?
Listen, I understand what this means. See, he doesn't. This is a cry for help.
A cry for help?
Yeah, this was a midlife crisis for me, man. I didn't have enough money to buy a motorcycle, so I grew my hair out. Look, John B. with the Shannon Sharp part on the side. I like that.
You like it?
I'm feeling it.
He's feeling it, too.
You
got to
wet it up, though. You got to juice it up, though, baby.
I need more of your juices and berries.
Soul Glow.
Oh, Soul Glow. Appreciate
soul
that.
Glow.
Good to have you back.
He's my guy. It's been
a
minute.
Home, man.
It's beautiful, man. Yeah. Like, oh. When it get
let me see them ankles, man. You got some lotion on them? It's the summer.
No,
you can't have
ashy
ones, man.
No, see, what happens is black people can't put a little lotion because what happens is
Jenna Reed.
You start sweating, bro.
Jenna, go.
Don't put lotion on them.
The Eagles.
Knuckles ashy.
Bart
ankles
Scott,
ashy.
The Eagles show Carson Wentz some love this offseason with a four-year extension with $107 million guaranteed. His head coach, Doug Peterson, said he sees this season as a great opportunity for Wentz, and he was highly complimentary of his quarterback. Remember, Wentz coming off back-to-back seasons cut short by injury. Bart, how hard will it be for Wentz to return to his 2017 Pro Bowl form?
Well, they have to go back to a formula, and he has to understand now that he's got the money, he's the franchise. You know, he's the most important player on the team because he touches the ball every play. So he's going to have to make sure that he can be available. The best ability is availability. And really, with Nick Foles going down to Jacksonville, it's some fans that would think that he was better for the team in the big games. So he has to go and he
that
has to.
Foles was.
That,
mm-hmm.
that Foles was. Gotcha. Because, you know, we always talk about playoff Rondo. We knew when Foles got in the playoffs, no matter what happened during the season, he was magical.
Yes.
And I think they recognize that the key is keeping Wentz healthy because of their draft pick, right? They went out and understand that Peters has been, Jason Peters, although great, Hall of Famer, no doubt, has struggled to stay healthy and he's starting to break down. So what did they do with their first draft pick? They went and got Andre Dillard, who was a tremendous pass protector. And if he can't if Jason Peters stays healthy, they can easily slide him in the guard, and they understand that they're going to have to run the ball. I think last year losing Jay Ajayi really put too much pressure on their quarterback position, so they go out and they get Miles Sanders, who's a tremendous running back that they can run, and then they finally went out and got somebody that can stretch the football field, reuniting, you know, Philadelphia with Deshaun Jackson, who can stretch the field, which is taking some of the pressure out of Ertz and also Aguilar to kind of carry the load, which means that they're going to have a lot of weapons. It's a lot of pressure on them. I don't understand how they continue to make these deals. They may have the greatest GM out there. The fact that they're able to go get Malik Jackson and add to that after losing Haloti Ngata,
they paid Jordan Howard. They brought him in addition to drafting the running back you mentioned. Howard Roseman does a great job at cap machinations, and he does a great job of drafting not just for this year but for the future. When you mention they move up in the draft to get Andre Dillard, that I think their best case scenario is he doesn't start a single game at tackle this year, that Peters is healthy, that Peters is great, but they know they've got the right tackle of the now and the future in Lane Johnson. They go out and target a left tackle, but I think your point on the offensive weapons is important, because I don't think this Philly defense is going to be as dominant as it was in 2017 and at portions of 2018. And for Carson, it is going to be a lot about developing a rapport with D-Jack, because you've harped on it, Chris. He is such a unique, deadly weapon in this league still at his advanced age. You cannot single cover him if he's going deep. If you are, you're going to have to play 15 yards off him and then cut that into a slant and just get 8 yards every time. So what will that rapport be? Because it also allows Jeffrey and Aguilar to drop down a peg in the receiving rotation, which is probably more their speed.
You're starting to rub off on him, Chris. He's starting to make sense.
I think both of you guys make great points. In the NFL now, when you talk to offensive line coaches, offensive coordinators, there's a theory that the way to make the offensive line better, with there's so much emphasis on passing, is try to have three tackles inside your starting lineup. So one of your guards, if you can make him a tackle, and you're talking about with Andre Dillard, the kid from Washington State, if he's able, if Peters can stay healthy, and you can move him to guard, you got a tackle, big guy, playing guard, so it's going to help out your pass protection, which you talked about, Nick, his expertise. Deshaun Jackson is one of the keys to what they're trying to do. I believe in institutional talent. They have that with Howie Roseman. They're putting all the pieces around Carson. I believe Carson's going to win a Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles, but Deshaun Jackson is going to open up that offense because he can stretch it. It makes Jeffrey a better possession receiver. It makes Aguilar a better slot receiver. It makes Ertz. Ertz can still do his thing there at the tight end. Their ability to be able to run the ball, it should be there better than it has been the last couple years. So they have all the pieces. I believe their defense, especially starting the season, will be a little more consistent like they were at the end of the season.
And it dictates coverage, right? Because when you have Deshaun Jackson, you know that he's going to get the double coverage. So now you got one-on-one for Alshon Jeffrey, who's a guy who can, you know, run you off, but still he has that huge catch radius. But then now the huge matchup and the person that's going to benefit the most is Ertz, because now he's going to he's going to get a safety or a linebacker without any help, and he's going to be able to...
always been Wentz's favorite target. Yeah, sometimes to the detriment of others, he's targeted Wentz a disproportionate
amount. You only need Deshaun Jackson to catch maybe 60 balls, but we know what his capabilities are. He leads the league or NFL probably in history and touchdowns over 60 yards or greater. So when you have that threat, you're going to have the field wide open.
And we're not all just sitting here blowing steam for the Eagles offense. Doug Peterson actually said this is the best set of skill players he's had on offense since he's been a head coach in Philadelphia.
To me, there's no doubt. I think Jordan Howard's the best running back they've ever had, and Deshaun Jackson is the most dangerous. I don't know if he's the best. He's the most dangerous wide receiver they've had. And I know offensive line talk's not always the most sexy or most interesting on television, but the reason it's so critically important to this team, it's important to every team, but what is the one real concern with Carson Wentz?
Health.
Health.
Right.
And so, like, and by the way, he was sacked 5% of the time his rookie year, 6% of the time his second year, 7% of the time last year. So that's been ticking in the wrong direction. And so you want to get that back the other way, because if he's healthy, we know how talented he is.
What's about his off-schedule plays? You know, he gets hurt being reckless on the football field. He has to understand how important he is. He can't be scrambling and trying to stem plays. It's better for him just to learn to throw the ball away and live to fight another day.
Because Nate Sudfeld is not Nick Foles at all.
You don't want Nate Sudfeld walking through that door.
No. Bart, stick around. Coming up, how much trouble are the Cowboys in if Zeke does indeed hold out? That's next on First Things First. In just one day, one of the greatest fighters of our generation puts his legacy on the line as Manny Pacquiao battles undefeated world champ Keith Thurman. It's the can't-miss fight of the summer. It's tomorrow, 9 Eastern, live on pay-per-view or order on the Fox Sports app.
Thurman in a decision pays about plus 165. Just putting it out there.
You're always saying what I was just about to say. We'll get to Ezekiel Elliott with Bart Scott in just a second. But first, Brewers and D-backs and Lorenzo Cain elevates at the center field wall.
I tell you, he's one of the best center fielders in baseball, man. He's exciting. He's a human highlight reel.
Couple World Series appearances, one championship. One of my favorite players. Maybe
that's
my favorite player in the
league.
That's when
the Royals used to be good.
Yeah, briefly.
Portland Timbers versus Orlando FC. Check out the teamwork here. Nice sweet kiss off the post for a Timbers goal.
I mean, that is beautiful.
Great header. Not the goal, the pass.
Yeah. I mean, the steal is great. The cross is outstanding. That's extraordinary. And then boom.
The cross, that's the way I want your head, Nick. I want you to be that color. See that right there?
Oh, the hair. No,
yeah,
no.
European soccer player style.
Man, I ain't doing no blonde dyed.
Elevation.
Well, Miami Pro League here, Bart. Derek Jones Jr. catches the reverse alley-oop, puts it down.
That's elevation. He probably can't shoot then. If he could dunk that good, he probably can't shoot.
That looks like Bart in high school. Not the guy dunking, the guy watching the guy fly by him and dunk.
Oh, come on, man. We all know you the dude that showed up to, you show up to the park with 25 wristbands on like you can ball.
I did wear headbands.
Headband, knee brace.
Yeah, no knee brace, but headbands, wristbands.
Ducks and Dallas Cowboys.
Fly, bro.
I got necks. Get out of here, scrub.
Since entering the NFL in 2016, Ezekiel Elliott has 4,000 rushing yards. That's 600 more yards than Todd Gurley, who's second in rushing yards in that span. Well, now Zeke wants to get paid like Gurley was and is contemplating holding out if he doesn't. Bart, how much easier will it be to defend the Cowboys if there is no Zeke to contend with?
So much easier because he's not going to drop the eighth man in the box because who do you respect? I don't even know who their backup running back is. Ezekiel Elliott's been the best running back since he's been in the league. And that's talking about the year where he missed games. You know, he's also a dual threat. He's a guy that's tremendous in pass protection as well. And we've seen what the offense looks when it goes through Dak.
Right.
It's not so well. We're talking about, you know, Zeke should have been the rookie of the year. They gave it to Dak just because it always goes to the position if things are close. But he sets the table for everybody. He sets that play action, Amari Cooper down the field. Do you expect to get much from Jason Witten? You're going to get 5 yards in a hook. You know what I mean? So if you want to continue to get the big plays, the explosive plays down the field, you have to have Ezekiel Elliott because all you're going to do is roll coverage and double Amari Cooper. You can drop anybody on Jason Witten. He ain't running past nobody. And, Dak Prescott is going to try and do too much. He's trying to get his contract. Ezekiel Elliott, to me, is the most important player on that offense, period.
Let's go around the NFL, and let's just say we had an open draft of all the Dallas Cowboys players.
Yep.
Anyone, you can have them. Any compensation, just open bidding.
Yep.
Who would fetch the biggest price? And that's the best player, and that would be Ezekiel Elliott. There wouldn't be people trading a couple first-round picks for Dak Prescott. I don't believe that. Amari Cooper would get a first-round pick. It wouldn't be multiple picks.
Marcus Lawrence probably get a first-round pick.
Yes, Travis absolutely. Frederick. They got some talented players. Some of the offensive linemen, Travis Frederick, if he was built to get a clean bill of health, he's definitely worth a first-rounder. But the only one worth multiple, that is Zeke. I can go to the numbers. I can go to what I see. I can go to when I watch the Cowboys, how this franchise changed when they drafted Ezekiel Elliott. Now, I thought Zeke was going to be special. He was one of the special running backs we ever had at Ohio State.
Oh, okay. Well,
and he plays every down, like you said. If you don't give him the ball on second down, he will be blocking, pass protection on third down. He can either come out of the backfield. He's great at blitz pickup. Last season, when the Dallas Cowboys, when they win time of possession, let's just forget the names. When they win time of possession, they were 8-0. The reason why they win time possession wasn't that offensive line. It's because Ezekiel Elliott. He's their most valuable player. I tell you guys all the time, Dennis Green taught me that they have a ranking system on the team, that they evaluate everything, and ultimately the 53-man roster is evaluating. He ranks the players 1 to 53. Ezekiel Elliott is clearly ranked number one Dallas Cowboy by me and by those, the experts that watch the game and respect the game.
And how much easier are the Falcons to defend if Julio's not out there? Would the Chiefs be without Tyreek Hill, which we might see this year?
Mm-hmm.
We saw it kind of for the Rams without Todd Gurley. I mean, he was there in the Super Bowl, but not really, and they scored 3 points. That when we are talking about the most important, most impactful non-quarterbacks in football on the offensive side of the ball, if Zeke's not one, he's in that top five. And so you saw the Giants when Odell went out. What happened to them? Like, when you are this type of talent, it's not always the best player is the most important guy. Yeah. Sometimes that's the case, but sometimes it matches up. And with Dak, we've seen Dak struggle when perfect situations, great offensive line, great running game, 8 in the box, and Dak still at times struggled. If all of a sudden you're, I think Rod Smith is their backup. Like, if all of a sudden it's just a guy back there, then Dak is not facing.
Well, the defense is going to get more complex because they don't have to show what they're doing, so they can zone blitz because they don't have any respect for Dak and being able to break down the defense. But I'll play devil's advocate for just a second. You know, the reason why, you know, you look at, you know, where Zeke is they're running, they've rolled a lot of the tread off the tires. So if I'm thinking about giving him an extension, you know, he's in year 4, going into year 5, and then if you give him extension, you're talking about paying him essentially till year 9. You know, and I think a lot of general managers are going to be scared off from what the Todd Gurley contract has really done out there in L.A., handcuffed the organization, because you know eventually that, you know, these running backs are going to wear down. And Ezekiel's taking a lot of hits. He's taking a lot of carries. So maybe they think, okay, well, let's just see if we can get him for 5 years and see if we can find a replacement for him next year just in case he wants the $15 million a year price tag.
Do you think he holds out? Do you think the Cowboys will
let it get to that? I think he has to hold out. I think that's the only play he has. He'll never have more leverage this year, as this team knows next year they're going to have to address a lot of contracts. They got to address the cornerback position who's going to get paid. They got to address Dak. So he understands that if he's going to get the oil, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, it's going to have to be this year, because going forward, it may not have an opportunity to really have the type of leverage that he has this year, because they have Super Bowl aspirations.
Bart, you played this game a long time. You've seen a lot of players who develop and were able to be competent NFL players. Ezekiel Elliott, since I met him when he was 18, there's certain guys, you know, Bart, they just different.
Yep.
They born to play this game. They got the body for it. They got the psyche for it. They lift the weights. They love the contact. That's who Ezekiel Elliott is. Big old head, running back, natural running skills, big, thick body, can catch out of the backfield, does not get hurt. You don't see a lot of people get square shots on him. To me, Zeke's one of them running backs that can play a long time. He takes care of his body, and there's just certain people just meant to do certain things.
And I understand your point as far as you do an extension. The extension probably would run through his 9th season, but you'd be guaranteeing he's on the team through his 7th season. And so I get the argument against it. The argument against it is, well, we can guarantee that by just letting the contract run out, 5th-year option,
franchise tag.
But that removes the human element. That removes the disgruntled player. That removes the possibility of a holdout. And listen, this Cowboys team is talented. It's not as talented as a 93 team. 93 team could suffer a holdout without Emmitt, go 0-2, and then go 15-2 the rest of the year. This Cowboys team can't have the hiccup. We saw a Seahawks team thought they had Super Bowl aspirations the year coming off the Super Bowl loss. Cam Chancellor, great player, not Zeke. He held out a couple weeks. They start slow. That cost them a home playoff game and a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. If Zeke's serious about a holdout, they almost have no choice but to pay.
They did lose the first 3 games that he sat out, He was suspended.
And they scored 22 total points in those.
Well, they got to keep pace with the Philadelphia Eagles, too. That's going to put some pressure on the organization as well.
All right. Take a break. Coming up, Danny Ainge comes to Kyrie's defense. Yes, you heard that right. That's next on First Things First.
How's Danny Ainge keep getting in this damn show, man?
Give me a low shot here, Bart. Let me see that.
Get that, baby.
Oh, yes, almost 8 o'clock.
Let me show you that. Listen, I'm an Instagram a picture at 11 and show you how that black skin work, baby. Self-lubricated.
Back here, First Things First, and we are going viral. Browns defensive end Myles Garrett recently worked out at an MMA gym. On Instagram, Garrett said he loves, quote, finding new ways to exceed my limits physically and mentally. So you ever try something like this?
I have, man. I've almost tried everything. And what I like about doing stuff like this is when you get in tough spots in the game, you can go to that spot mentally where you were when you're doing all this training. And then you look at your opposition and be like, he didn't do this. He didn't do this type of training. He didn't pay the price. I know I got more in it than him, so I love it. He's going to be one of my favorites. You're going to see plenty of videos of him on this show, 20 sacks, Miles, this year.
And, man, got the talent for it. Was a phenom at A&M, one of the best recruits they had gotten in a generation there. And now it's going to be harder to double-team him when you have Sheldon Richardson, when you've got Olivier Vernon, when you got Larry Ogunjobi. And the cardio stuff that the boxing and MMA training does for you, man, those three-minute rounds of boxing, five-minute rounds of MMA, and those feel like hours. So this is great. This is awesome.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.